And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hey there, sports fans. Today is Wednesday, September 18th, and welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino, joined by Kevin and Darren. This is episode 125. You can catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on Facebook. We love to hear from you, so feel free to leave your questions or comments, and we'll be sure to respond. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get started. Today on the show, a lot going on again. NFL is back, so there's always a lot going on now. We're going to start it with the Jets. It's a 24-17 win versus Tennessee. Aaron Rodgers secured his first complete victory as the Jets starting quarterback. Braylon Edwards, 20-yard touchdown run, 4:31 remaining, put the Jets ahead for good, with Rodgers throwing 176 and 2. Jets capitalized on tight mistakes, scoring 17 points off turnovers, including a blocked punt and a critical interception in the game. Despite Will Levis's efforts to keep the Titans in the game, including a late touchdown pass, Jets defense held strong, secured the win. Kev, let's start it with the Jets.
First, make sure we understand it's Braylon Allen. Braylon Edwards. Little wide receiver, great.
And he spelled his first name differently.
Yeah.
Apologies.
That's okay. Sorry about that. You know what? It's a win. They needed a win. They got the win. It's the NFL. That's what you're playing for. That's all you care about is get the damn win. You know, honestly, the offense has to start out better than they have. You know, this is the second straight week they've come out sputtering on offense. They finally got Hall and Allen going. You know, 95 yards combined rushing, 75 yards combined receiving. Great effort by the two of them. But let's face it, at 7-0 and with nothing going on, they got bailed out because Levis made another bonehead play that he's been making far too often. He had a couple last week in their loss. That stupid backward lateral as he's falling down, trying to dish it off to somebody. You're in field goal range. The worst thing you can do is turn it over. If you're being pressured, get down. Save the field goal. Puts the Titans up 10-0 at that point. No, luckily, it stopped that. And want to just figure some things out. The defense, not great, again, but made enough plays. Sherwood stepped up with Mosley out. You know, 12 tackles for him. McDonald, 3 sacks. I know 2 of them at least were probably more coverage sacks. But at least he got some pressure on him. They held the two running backs, Pollard and Spears, to 82 yards and a 3.5 average. So, you know, tightened up a little bit there. But again, I think what it comes down to is the fourth quarter, Jets are tied. You've got Aaron Rodgers. And for the first time as a Jet fan, you feel like you have a quarterback that you can trust to make the right play, who's not going to make the stupid interception, who's going to make the stupid turnover, who's going to just, you know, do something to lose a game. You feel like you have a chance to win with Aaron Rodgers back there. Darren, what are your thoughts?
Well, Rodgers was huge in the fourth quarter. He made a great throw to Garrett Wilson, where Wilson adjusted to it in the air. He threw the ball just knowing what Garrett was going to be. We haven't had a quarterback able to do that. Okay. And the play of the game was after they did that little pitch play to Hall, where he lost 6. They threw the 2nd and 16 to Williams. And Williams went up and got it, only catch of the game. But Mike Williams will be a factor as we go forward. Irvin Charles, to me, was the player of the game. He blocked the punt. His coverage must have saved him 20 to 25 yards going out there. They call him the wolf because he's the lone wolf that goes down there or whatever. He did everything right. Braylon Allen looks like a budding star, like Gino said. The 1-2 punch in the backfield right now looks as good as we've seen in a really long time, since the Thomas Jones years when we had multiple guys going. Allen caught a touchdown, rushed for a touchdown, 20 years old, youngest guy in the league, 40-year-old quarterback, 20-year-old running back. Love it. Eccles, by the way, had a pick. Eccles seems to make plays when he plays. I don't think he's as good as Reed, but what he does is he gets out there and he makes plays. And he had a big pick in his spot, after Levis got the ball back. After the Jets tied it up, he picked it right back and you know, gave the Jets the ball back. The O-line is showing some improvement. It was okay against the pass. The sacks were all coverage sacks. And against the run, they started opening up holes in that second half for both Hall and for Allen. the thing you see is Hall's going to be the big hitter. Hall's, I mean, though Allen had the long touchdown run, Hall's going to be the guy that can take it for the long distance. He's going to be the guy that can go 60 yards. Allen's going to be the guy that always moves it forward. So you kind of like that. Like you said, with McDonald, he had the three sacks and a forced fumble in the game. He was good. Sauce, by the way, didn't look that great. He got beat a couple. I mean, listen, the touchdown, I can't really crush him on. The ball was, it was right there. The ball just was underthrown, and the receiver just hit the floor and caught it. But
you know, and that one, I think was also, the receiver went down to catch, but the other, I forget who.
Chuck Clark.
Coming over, sliding over, and Sauce almost looked like he looked down and, like, slowed up to avoid stepping on Clark and stepping on. I mean, I'm not trying to absolve Sauce because he did not have a good game. It was one of his worst games in his career so far.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he wasn't great, but he's not awful. I mean, you know, Ridley's a high quality receiver. He's going to get open from time to time. He's going to catch it. I mean, if you watch Monday night, Darius' big play Slay got beat at the end of the game by Drake London. You know, this stuff happens. The Levis lateral turned the game around, to be honest with you, like you said. And then the injuries, and it's, you know, Jermaine Johnson being lost for the year, Mosley getting hurt, Michael Carter III getting hurt, Reed not playing. So that's four starters that, you know, potentially may not play this week. That's stuff to look at, G.
Injuries a big part as we go through this NFL recap.
If you look all at the title of the show, you'll see what I think the same thing.
Yeah, all of the NFL. On the Tennessee side, Tajay Spears went down, the running back. It's an ankle injury, estimated 3-week return. So he's not back until week 5, estimation. Listen, my only point to you guys is defense has to play better than this. All I got. I mean, you know, this is 2 weeks in a row. We have not seen a good defense, not even forget about top 5 defense. We haven't seen a good defense. Defense has to play better than this when they start playing a good team. You know, I'm not going back to week 1 to San Francisco, but they play a good team. The defense can't play like that. So
I think the defense will be fine if they can sit there and establish the defensive tackles against the run. I think it's the run that's throwing them off. I don't think it's the pass. I think that it's the run. And if they can keep, and like Kev said, they got better as the game went on. Pollard started off much stronger than he finished. This team is going to need to get an anchor in there to play alongside, Quinnen. Quinnen's going to have to play better, by the way. Quinnen's a guy that you're not seeing. You just don't see much. Quincy had a decent game, but Quinnen didn't do a thing. They are going to need to be better against the run. That will enable them to be stronger against the pass. G?
Not going to harp on it because I think the first 3 weeks of the regular season is what the preseason used to be. So I'm not harping yet, but this is 2 in a row where the defense has not come out and played well. Forget about top 5. They haven't played well right now. Let's see where it leads. You know, again, they got New England Thursday night. Let's see where it goes. But this is 2 weeks in a row. Defense has to play better. If you're gonna win 11 games, 12 games like we think, you know, it has to play better. Kev?
Well, you know, one of the things was, you know, up until that Levis turnover, the first one, the fumble, I texted you guys saying, boy, this is going to be a much different tone this week than last week. You know, this week was not going to be as forgiving because it was Tennessee. It was not San Francisco. You're right, Gino. You know, basically teams are playing preseason games right now. You know, God forbid you play, you know, everybody's worried, oh, we can't have anybody get injured during preseason. Meanwhile, these guys are not ready to play a full 60-minute game. And they're all getting hurt, and you'll address a lot of the injuries
exactly.
later.
Exactly.
And you know, going into the Thursday night's game against New England, you know, Brissett's not going to turn the ball over. That's his game. It's going to be, can they stop Gibson and Stevenson? You know, the two of them combined for 170 yards the other day in their game. Darren, they need to make sure they stuff the run. That's the only thing that the Patriots going to be able to do to beat them is if they can run the ball down the Jets' throat.
Just a general question for you guys. I feel like the league is going more run-oriented than it has in the past few years. I feel like we're seeing a lot more running than we have seen. Now, the only reason why I say that is because I believe teams are playing more nickel, and I think we're just seeing it. Even when you look at the Chiefs, you look at all these teams, they seem to be running the ball more and more. And I do think that I mean, listen, we would all say Chicago has a really good defense. Tennessee put up 17 on them in the first half 2 weeks ago, too. Tennessee's not as bad a team as we thought they were going to be coming in. I'm not saying, Gino, that the defense played well by any stretch.
No, I didn't agree with that.
Did not play well by any stretch. But Tennessee's a little bit better than we think. Chicago's defense played really well against Houston. The Jet defense played okay in the second half. Gave up the tying drive, which I didn't love to see, by the way. When they went up 17-10, I don't like to see them be able to come down there. They got to get more consistent pressure, and they're going to have to really, I mean, you know, the kid from Arizona that they signed free agency doesn't come back till week five. They need someone to help stuff that run. But I feel like the league as a whole is running more than I've seen when I'm watching these games. I feel like it's a lot more of a G.
So I think they are, but I want to see how this, as we get into October, how, if that changes, because I think a lot of this has to do with right now, the fact that there's no preseason anymore. And these teams are just getting the feel for what's going on with the offense and how they're going to play these teams. And again, it's definitely something worth watching, and you could see it, Kev.
I mean, to use it just as the example, no preseason action. And they had three new starters on the offensive line and AVT coming back from injury. They had no chance to develop any cohesion in the preseason. You saw it, you know, as you're starting to get into the second half of both games, really. The line got better as the game progressed. And I think that's just a matter of getting some continuity and playing, you know, together as a unit that you're not getting because teams don't want to play.
I agree. Preseason. Yeah. No, listen, I agree.
The other big question for you guys is we're wrapping up the Jets. So Jermaine Johnson goes down. He's the – even though he didn't put a lot on the stat sheet, he was getting pressure on Sunday. What does this mean for Reddick? Do you go out and sign Reddick right now, or do you roll your dice with McDonald and bring up the other guys, Holmes and McGregor, foot in the practice squad, and just say, I'm not giving in? Kev, what are your thoughts?
I don't think I give in yet. You know, there's no need to yet. Well, let's see what the other guys can give you. You know, they do go deep. You know, we'll see how talented they are. You know, Clemens and McDonald are both high draft picks. You know, give them a shot. What's more important is run stuff. You know, I'd rather them go out and re-sign Al Woods.
Yeah, Al Woods should be on this team. I don't understand why.
You mentioned last week, you know, as a guy who's still out there in free agency. That's the type they need. That's what they need more than Reddick right now, until it's proven otherwise.
G, thoughts?
I disagree. I think they need him in here right now. You need to do something with this defense. Maybe that's the spark. Maybe him being in this lineup sparks everybody a little bit and gives you something that you haven't had the first two games. I mean, this defense right now looks ordinary. Again, I don't want to overplay this through two games because I really believe that there's no preseason and this is the preseason, but this defense looks ordinary. It looks average right now. If you're willing to say you're going to have the 15th best defense in the league, then you don't need Reddick. But I think you need to bring him in here. Darren, what do you think?
Well, I honestly think that I agree with Kev. I actually don't want to bring Reddick in right now and overpay him for the sake of overpaying him. I don't like guys. Listen, I know as a fan, I'm supposed to root for the player and not for the organization. I never root for the player over the organization. You have a contract. It's not like you're a free agent. You have a contract. Your job is to play your contract. You signed your contract. Sorry. That's it.
I don't buy that crap.
It drives me nuts that everybody needs to get paid all the time. Fucking go out and prove it.
I agree with all of that, except the beginning of what you just said is, I'm not willing to bend yet. So when?
I'm not willing to bend at all. Kev's willing to bend somewhat.
Let's see what happens.
I mean,
you know, with the way the schedule broke for the Jets this year, I mean, just the traveling and the schedule itself was tough because they go out to the West Coast, come home, short week, go back to Tennessee, come home, a shorter week playing New England. That part of it is extremely tough. They need to survive and get through tomorrow night and hopefully pull out the win against the Patriots, get them to 2-1, then they've got the mini bye. Then they can reassess. and figure out, you know, looking at that New England game as another data point to say, because even if you sign him right now, you're not going to get him in there for New England, period. He's not playing Thursday night. Even if he signed Monday, he was not playing Thursday.
Yeah, but you see, your defense could play crappy again like it has the first 2 weeks, and you're still 1-1. So if you get a win, but if you get a win tomorrow night and you're 2-1, that doesn't change my stance on whether or not you need to bring him in here. If your defense looks ordinary again, then you still need to bring him in here. I mean, I don't see the defense becoming unordinary. So all of a sudden you think a light switch is flipping right now with this defense down a couple of players? I don't buy it.
Guys, which defense has played great so far, though, G, in the league?
I'm not talking about anybody else. Has Baltimore looked elite? But we're not talking about anybody else.
All good defenses take time to gel. Nobody comes preseason, out week one and plays great. Nobody does.
Preseason, I said this was a top five defense. They are average at best right now.
Okay, so the 14 teams that are better than them defensively so far statistically that you've seen.
I'm not going through.
I know because it's not there.
They're the average, but Darren, you've seen this through two games.
They haven't.
They're average at best right now.
I think there's also an overreaction to playing what might be one of the best offenses in all football week one when you haven't played at all in preseason. I mean, the 49ers don't exactly what the hell they're doing. You know, the difference was you had Jordan in there instead of McCaffrey. Yes, that was an issue. The running defense was an issue. But with the weapons they have, with Brock Purdy leading that team, they know exactly what the hell they're doing on offense.
And that's why I didn't drive this point home like I did, but like I wanted to last week for that reason. But now it's two games. It's Tennessee. You know,
they gave up 17 points.
You lost a couple of players.
But they also didn't play that well. They gave up 17 points and gave up under 300 yards of offense. And that's without playing well. Imagine when they're not playing well.
But that's not the point.
They played average.
It's average.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I don't think a lot of teams come out this early in the season and have elite defense. I don't think we see it. I don't think anybody sees it. I think defenses take time to get better. Remember, you know, the Giants Super Bowl team. Well, okay.
I disagree.
Give me your example.
I think the top five defenses that we think should be the top five defenses should be playing that well at the beginning of the year.
Baltimore top five defense.
I can give other teams a chance to gel that I don't think are outstanding defenses. I can't do that for teams I think have an outstanding defense. I can't just make stuff up. If I think they're an outstanding defense, then I expect them to be an outstanding defense. Now, the one thing I will tell you both, and that is preseason, we kind of thought Reddick would be here. So that's part of why we thought this was top five defense. So without him here, do they automatically go from a top five to a top 10? I don't know. But, you know, for me, you need to bring him in. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
Okay.
For me, before game four, he needs to be here.
I just haven't seen any team that was supposed to be exceptional defensively play well yet.
We're only talking about the Jets.
Bears might be the
closest. Well, no, I'm talking about the NFL, G. I don't know why you keep reverting back to the Jets. You're comparing them to the league, saying they're 15th best in the league, but then we can't talk about the rest of the league only when you want to talk about the league.
No. Because your question started with Reddick. We're only talking about this team.
But you bring up they're you want to be 15th best in the league. But then when I say league, we can't say it. But when you say league,
because we're talking about Reddick.
I understand.
We're not talking about all the teams in the league and how they're playing defense. But you're talking about whether or not you should bring in Reddick.
But you're telling me that their defense has been poor.
It has.
And I'm saying who has been great.
I'm not telling you it has.
I don't think it's been. I don't think it was poor week two. I think it was great, but I think it was poor.
Okay, I think average at best.
How good is Dallas?
Well, who's better?
How good was Dallas's defense coming into the season with Diggs and Parsons?
Who's better?
The question originated from the Reddick. That's what we started with. It's not a question about other defenses. Stop the both of yous. Focus on what we're talking about. We're talking about whether or not you should bring in Reddick to make your defense better for the Jets. Not
you keep comparing them to other teams in the league?
I'm not.
If they're average, that means that you're comparing them to the middle of the level of the rest of the league. Or you could say simply that they're not as good as they should be. And then you wouldn't be comparing them to the rest of the league.
But I don't think that. I think they're average at best right now, and they need to bring them in.
Okay, and all I asked you was for five teams that are playing better.
I'll give them to you if you want them, but that's not the question. It's irrelevant.
Pittsburgh, Chicago.
That was my question.
It's irrelevant to the
Pittsburgh has played
point.
Nobody. Chicago gave up the same 17 to Tennessee. And they won simply because Levis gave them the game away, and they had their block punt they scored a touchdown on.
Yep.
Are we ready to move across to the Giants?
Yes.
Let's go. I'm just saying. Baltimore blew a 10-point lead at home against the Raiders. That's all I'm saying.
Washington beats the Giants 21-18. Jaden Daniels secures his first NFL win, leading my Commanders to a 21-18 victory over the Giants, despite failing to score on touchdowns on multiple drives. Daniels' leadership down the field and Austin Siebert's franchise record 7 field goals, including the game winner, proved decisive. Siebert, who replaced York, made all 7 field goal attempts while the Giants struggled without their kicker, Graham Gonneau, who was injured early. Daniels finished with 226 passing yards. The Commanders running back, Brian Robinson Jr., had a career-high 133 rushing yards. For the Giants, neighbors, 10 for 18 for 127 and a touch, but he failed to come up with a pass on a fourth down, a key fourth down pass from Jones. The Giants become the first team to score 3 touchdowns, not allow a touchdown, and lose. My Commanders got a win. Kev, the same way you said your Jets got a win, that's what I'm saying about my Commanders. We got a win, and I still think the Giants are horrible. Who wants to start this off?
My point is 8 drives for the Washington. 1 was a kneel down at the half, so the other 7 drives they scored in every drive. Giant defense cannot get them off the field, period. I don't care if they were 7 field goals or if it's mixed in a touchdown here or there. The fact of the matter is they didn't do enough to get Washington off the field one time the entire game.
Go Commanders.
Daniels looked very good. No doubt about it. And the Giants just stink. Darren?
Okay.
Darren?
Okay. Again, they lose a game when they score 3 touchdowns, not giving up 1 is an interesting stat. Gano gets hurt on the opening kickoff, trying to chase down a runner, and it gets called back for a penalty anyway. What are you going to do? So then they start quizzing him about how you didn't have another kicker on. Who has a third kicker? But here's my problem. I know he was injured, but he hurt his hamstring. He didn't hurt his calf. It's a totally different injury. Now here's my point, though. Okay, Gillum hit a 40-yarder last year against the Saints. I know he missed his first extra point. Then Dable abandons the kicker the rest of the game because he missed 1 extra point. Brian Dable's horrible. I'm sorry. Gillum hit a 40-yarder against the damn Saints. You know, they practice it. The kicker practices punting. The punter practices kicking. Why in the world would you do what you did? They failed on all 3 2-point conversions. Jones didn't play badly. Okay, he was okay. He always plays well against Washington. You see the best of him, G. Nobody else sees it, just Washington. Neighbors had a monster game. He had 10 catches. He dropped the crucial play that probably wins the game. But you never know because the Giants probably go for it from 4th down from the 8 rather than kicking a freaking field goal. So you don't even know that they'll do that. Robinson ran up and down the field. They could not stop the run all day. Brian Robinson was a monster. Daniels is a huge talent. But if he can't get him into the end zone, this team is going nowhere. He's got to figure out how to turn. You have 7 drives and you score 7 drives and you can't get into the end zone, you're going to lose to every team except the Giants and the Panthers.
I agree. It's a rebuild with a rookie QB. It's a rebuild. I'm okay. No, defense is completely horrible.
And he's fun to watch.
Yeah.
He can take off. He's a little slight. I worry every time they tackle him that he's going to get up, but he gets up.
So do I. Yep.
So my big problem here was Dable. Dable literally lost the game for his team by abandoning the kicker. You have somebody there. You have to try extra points. You have to. You can't sit there and constantly go for 2 because they were like the worst 2-point plays I've ever seen. They had no shot on any of them. They were nowhere close. It was awful. The Giants scored three touchdowns, gave up none, and lost. You can't make it up, Kev.
Now, to me, you know, going back to the injury thing, Gano was hobbling. I forget if it was a calf or the groin or something.
It might have been groin.
So either way, so you know he's hobbled, and you know there's a chance that something might happen. You've got two decisions to make. Either you make sure Gillen's ready to kick off to try to save Gano that way and save Gano for extra points and field goals. Or two, make sure the day before Gillen gets more practice kicking just in case Gano does get hurt. I mean, I know they practice every week. What do they get? 5 kicks a week?
The punter? I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't tell you.
What else are they doing? What else are they doing? They should be kicking 40 times a week.
I mean, you mean to tell me on Saturday he couldn't have gone out there and kicked 20 balls through the uprights just on the – God forbid if Gano does get hurt. I mean, the problem is 40 yards.
Once the doctor clears him, I can't put it on Dable. Once the doctor says he's ready to play, I can't put it on Dable.
But you have to have
that respect. What I could put on Dable is the fact that he abandoned it.
Yeah.
But terrible. Darren, terrible. You know what? Kevin's point is correct, though. Because
I don't disagree with what he's saying about him kicking it.
Even if medical clears him, you got to still have a thought in your head that, you know what, this guy hasn't looked right in 3 days making a kick. Gillum, get out there and at least practice extra points. Even if you're not practicing 40-yard field goals, practice extra points at least. Yeah. I mean, it's a good point by Kev. It really is. And it's got to go to
Dable. I agree with that point. I just can't sit there and criticize the coach for saying and thinking that Gano's going to be his guy, and it was a different injury that got him. But at the same point, it's like, you know, I think Dable lost his team that game.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Anything else on the Giants?
No, the Mangini Dable thing is starting to look closer and closer. Stubborn and stupid.
Absolutely. Yep.
I'm being honest, stubborn and stupid.
I agree.
He's the guy. I mean, Mangini, you remember, he's the guy that when he went to Cleveland, he took down the Jim Brown stuff and all the great championships. Yep. I mean, this is what Dable reminds me of. He reminds me of a complete idiot.
Yep. All right. Let's go to recap. So Thursday night, Buffalo beat Miami 31-10. Bills dominated Dolphins. Cook scoring 3 touchdowns. Defense forcing 3 turnovers, including 2 interceptions off Tua, who left the game with a concussion. Get to that in a sec. Despite Josh Allen's solid performance, Bills' offensive success, the injury to Tua and a series of Dolphins injuries overshadowed the game. Buffalo moves to 2-0, by the way. Tua, concussion. They're saying it could be 8 weeks. Who the hell knows? Just another injury. Darren?
I mean, listen, he's got a slide. With his history, there's no reason for him to take that hit. He can't do it. You just can't do it. Number two is the question is going to be his retirement. I mean, how many bad blows to the head is this guy going to take before he's walking around at the age of 40 like a vegetable? I mean, you can't really it's too much. He was playing awful as it was, by the way.
He was.
Miami was not nearly as good as Buffalo in that game, which kind of surprised me at home. I thought Miami would arrive for that game, and they did not. They haven't looked good in the first 2 weeks. And Buffalo did. I mean, I thought that Cook played great at running back for Buffalo, but the concern is Tua. I mean, it's all about him. And if he can't go, you know, Skyler's not the answer. Skyler Thompson's not the answer. I watched
him play Huntley
for 3 years. He's not the guy.
Neither is Huntley. So,
Skyler Thompson and Huntley get a, right now. I'm surprised they don't go get a Tannehill. I'm surprised they don't go get somebody that has experience, at least, that has led a playoff team. Not saying Tannehill's the end-all, be-all, but bring him back.
Gotcha.
You know, or you make phone calls and you try to get, a solid backup off another team right now. Kev?
Yeah, I think the problem to me watching that play is in real time, it sure didn't look like it was a concussion-causing hit. You know, it looked like a hit that you see a lot of times in a football game. And, you know, to see him go down and that fencing, I guess they call it, when the arms just sort of stiffen up and everything else, that's scary stuff. That, you know, hit like that shouldn't leave a player in a condition like that.
Except
when you've had a history of concussions, they become easier and easier every time you get hit in the head. And that's
I'm sorry. And the irony of it is that DeMar Hamlin gives the hit.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, all the irony of a guy that certainly doesn't want to be involved in a situation like that ever again. DeMar Hamlin. It wasn't a dirty hit. It was clean.
Oh, it was totally clean. I mean, very clean. Did you guys think in the moment until you saw Tua on the ground, did you think it was anything violent like you – like
I thought it was. I thought he got hit. Okay. I thought right away. I was like, oh, he can't take that shot to the head. And then he went down. I thought it right away. I really did. It wasn't that little of him, just because it's him.
If it wasn't Tua, would you have thought? If it wasn't Tua, would you have thought this?
If it was Rodgers, I would have been worried about his ankle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm being honest. Or his foot or his Achilles. You know, I wouldn't have been. I mean, but because it was Tua, I was like, he can't take any blows to the head.
I mean, I know it's Josh Allen. He's bigger than Tua, but if Josh Allen takes that hit from a Miami defender, are you worried about him having a concussion?
No, you're more worried about the defender of Miami going backwards and getting – and if he got hurt.
I think when you consider all that with Tua, being Tua, given his history, that's what leads you to the worry about his career and his quality of life.
Yep.
You know, never mind playing football.
Yeah. All right. Continuing on, so Cleveland beat Jacksonville 18-13. Browns bounced back from a loss with a gritty 18-13 win over Jacksonville, despite missing key players like Chubb and Njoku. Watson ran for a touchdown. Browns defense sacked Trevor Lawrence four times, holding off a late Jags comeback to secure the victory. Injuries, Evan Engram, hamstring, probably 2 weeks. And Tank Bigsby suffered a contusion in the shoulder, TBD. Rumor is it's at least 4 weeks, and just more injuries as we go through this. Any comments on those guys?
Well, Cleveland won the game despite 13 penalties for 100 yards as well. You know, they didn't do a lot of things right, but what they did do was stop Jacksonville, who's now 0-2. Looked like they were on the doorstep of winning game one against Miami. And then you thought the way Cleveland played in week one that they would win game two against Cleveland. Now they're 0-2 going to Buffalo instead of 2-0. You know, so that's what happened. Kev?
I mean, going back to last year, that 7 straight losses by Lawrence as a starting quarterback. Never thought we'd see that in the NFL. And he's got to step up his game, plain and simple. I mean, they've got talent on offense there. Lawrence has to play better.
Okay. Green Bay is a winner, 16-10 over Indianapolis. Malik Willis, his first start for the Packers, leading to a 16-10 win over the Colts, throwing his first career touchdown pass. Green Bay relied on a strong rushing attack, solid defense to overcome the absence of Jordan Love. Indy struggled offensively. Anthony Richardson threw 3 interceptions. Josh Jacobs in the win rushed 32 times for 151 yards. Green Bay, Indy, guys?
Well, the one thing I'd say about this, again, I've been talking about it for 2 years now. Richardson's not accurate, okay? And he completed 50% of his passes and threw 3 interceptions. It tells you everything you kind of need to know about this. Green Bay controlled the game. And yet, even with all that, and Willis played as well as he's going to play, Malik Willis. They only won by 6. I mean, it's not like they blew him out, but Willis was 12 for 14. He ran for 41 yards, ran for a score. I mean, he did a lot of things right, but Green Bay has very little margin for error with Willis at QB.
Agreed. The Chargers, they beat Carolina 26-3. Chargers moved to 2-0 in this game. Justin Herbert has thrown significantly less under Harbaugh, attempting just 46 passes in the first two games. Chargers are thriving with Dobbins and Gus Edwards. Chargers have a really good defense. It's a strong running attack. 26-3 over the Panthers. It's the first time they're 2-0 since 2012. Darren?
Yeah, they forced Bryce Young into the bench because he was that bad.
Yep.
Completed 18 for 26 for 84 yards. You know how hard that is? That's freaking awful. 3 yards a pop, basically. And it's just the kid is shell-shocked. Andy Dalton will be starting going forward. Chargers have probably played 2 weakest offensive teams in the league, or 2 of the weakest offensive teams in the league. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play as they go, as the competition steps up. They're playing the Steelers this week. So, again, they're not playing against an offensive juggernaut this week again. So their defense will continue to look good. Anxious to see how they play when they start playing against better competition. But Dobbins, 17 for 131 on the score, is a monster. Kev?
Well, they beat the Raiders, who were able to come back and somehow score against the Ravens and upset them. But I think, you know, the Chargers are doing a great job. Harbaugh wants to play physical, run the ball. and throw it when he has to, and that's what they're doing right now. As far as Young, over the last 2 years, he is 30th and last in yards per game and completion percentage and interception thing, and 29th out of 30 in QBR. Yep. The other guy worse than him since the start of last year?
Zach
Wilson.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you for the lead in, Kev. Next game,
you're welcome.
Las Vegas 26, Baltimore 23. Baltimore's 0-2. Gardner Minshew led the Raiders to a thrilling 26-23 comeback, orchestrating three fourth quarter drives and setting up Carlson's game winning 38-yard field goal with 27 seconds left. Despite trailing by 10 points in the final 12 minutes and only accumulating 27 yards of rushing in the game, Minshew and Devontae Adams, they were key for this game to help the Raiders get there. Ravens are 0-2 for the first time since 2015. Darren?
Yeah, watching this game for the first 58 minutes, there was no chance I thought that the Ravens were ever losing this game. Yep. They always seemed, even when the game was a three-point game, they always seemed like they were in control. Everything seemed normal. Then all of a sudden, with 2 minutes to go, they get stopped. They punt to the Raiders, and the Raiders just start moving, and they had no answer for Devontae Adams. As you said, Minshew led two late drives for the win. Lamar was below average for Lamar, I thought. I didn't think he had a really good game. And Tucker misses field goals in back-to-back games. Not something I don't know what his streaks are, but that's not something you see often. Kev?
Yeah. Just shocking the way they choked that game away. I thought for sure, you know, coming off opening night, losing to the Chiefs, and then having the, you know, extra time off, you know, being the Thursday night to the Sunday game, I thought for sure they're going to blow out the Raiders. My poor wife lost her knockout pool this week. So that's
there are a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people got knocked out on the next game. New Orleans totally destroyed Dallas 44-19. New Orleans is 2-0. Derek Carr and Alvin Kamara led New Orleans to a commanding victory, snapping the Cowboys' 16-game regular season home win streak. Saints' dominant performance was led by Kamara with 115 yards and three touchdowns on the ground, two catches for 65 yards and a touchdown in the air. New Orleans was up 35-16 at the half. This was never close. Any comments, guys?
Never a game. Carr looks rejuvenated. And, you know, 50 and 57-yard touchdowns for the Saints are big plays. Cowboys even had a 55-yarder, so a lot of big plays in this game.
And another injury of note, Taysom Hill goes down. It's a chest injury. TBD, they're saying maybe it's 2 or 3 weeks. We'll see what happens with that. Next game on the board is Seattle and New England. Seattle 23, New England 20 in overtime. Jason Myers hit a 31-yard field goal to lift the Seahawks to the victory. Geno Smith threw for 327 yards and led a crucial 8-play, 71-yard drive in overtime to set up the winning kick. New England got solid performances from Brissett, from Ramondre Stevenson, from Gibson. They forced overtime but couldn't score in their first possession. A blocked Pat's field goal attempt late in regulation kept Seattle alive in this game and led to Myers tying 38-yard field goal before the eventual game winner in overtime. Seattle's 2-0. Anything, guys?
Pat's playing harder than I expected them to play. They've been good. They can't throw the ball down the field, all right? So even when Brissett completes something, it's about a 5 to 8 yard pass. He just can't throw the ball down the field. But they're running the ball hard. And their defense has been playing very well, better than I expected in the front seven.
Yep. Okay. Minnesota beats San Francisco 23-17. Minnesota's 2-0. Sam Darnold passed for 268 yards and two touchdowns, including a 97-yard strike to Jefferson. Vikings defense delivered six sacks on Purdy, who also threw two interceptions. Minnesota's ground game posted 146 yards rushing, their most productive outing in 3 years. Despite two red zone turnovers, leading to 49ers touchdowns, Jefferson left in the third quarter with an injury to the tricep. Another guy down. Looks like he's probably out a couple of weeks. Fred Warner's strong defensive play for San Francisco wasn't enough to prevent them from losing their eighth straight game in Minnesota. San Francisco, by the way, also lost Deebo Samuel to a calf injury. Looks like it could be 4 weeks before we see him back. McCaffrey already down. They got injury problems all over the place. Any comments, guys?
Purdy was okay. I mean, he got sacked a ton. Mason rushed for 100 again, so he's still running the ball well. That 97-yard play to Jefferson was a thing of beauty, to be honest with you, the way Jefferson ran after he caught the touchdown, beating the double team. You know, it's good. I like seeing Sam Darnold do well, to be honest with you. I always felt like I got a raw deal here in New York.
Okay. Tampa Bay beat Detroit 2016. Tampa Bay moves to 2-0. Baker Mayfield, 11-yard touchdown run late in the third quarter, combined with some efficient passing. The Bucs defense holding off the Lions' late drives. Detroit missed opportunities, including a crucial field goal error. And Jared Goff's two interceptions contributed to this defeat. Lions coach Dan Campbell, by the way, made a critical mistake by causing confusion on the field, which resulted in a penalty that wasted valuable time and removed the chance for a short field goal in the first half. Detroit, Amon-Ra St. Brown injured. Looks like it may only be a week. We'll see. Doesn't look like it's too bad. It's a knee injury. Any comments, guys?
Well, Detroit had double the yardage of Tampa. I mean, they moved the ball up and down the field. They either – one of three things happened. Either they got stopped on downs, they kicked the field goal, or they threw an interception. Baker looks fiery, looks loose. Looks like he's playing really, really well right now. I mean, they weren't dominant. I mean, Godwin had a really nice game. They weren't dominant in this game, but they did enough. Bucks are 2-0.
Okay. Arizona defeats the Rams 41-10. Kyler Murray delivered an outstanding performance, throwing for 266 and three touchdowns. Snapped a 9-game losing streak against the Rams. Rookie Marvin Harrison Jr. caught his first two NFL touchdowns, and contributing to a dominant first-half lead. He wound up with four catches for 130 yards and two touchdowns. Connor was impressive with 21 runs for 122 yards. Injuries. Cooper Kupp goes down. It's an ankle injury. Rumored to be 5 weeks. Combine that with Nacua, and the Rams are down. Some massive players. Darren?
Yeah, you got to love – this game was never a game, by the way.
Never again.
So it jumped on him, never again. You got to love this kid, Marvin Harrison Jr., though. After the game, they ask him about his big day, and he says, you know what? There were four passes that came my way that I didn't come up with. Kyler's only four incompletions were attempted to me. Not that they were all his fault, but he was unhappy about that. Reminds me of his
love
father.
Love it.
He's just a classy guy.
He's a gamer.
I thought that was an unbelievable comment. That's the only thing I'll leave you with this game. Never a game. This game was never a game.
Yep. Okay. Kansas City beats Cincinnati 26-25. Kansas City moves to 2-0. Cincinnati 0-2. Butker clinched a dramatic 26-25 victory for the Chiefs with a 51-yard field goal as time expired. Following a crucial pass interference call on the Bengals, Mahomes threw for 151-2. He also had two interceptions. Joe Burrow looked good, finally, passed for 258-2. Key plays included a fumble return touchdown by Chimari Connor and a late penalty on the Bengals. Wide receiver Jamar Chase that extended the Chiefs' final drive. Guys?
Well, these two teams always play an epic game, okay? Burrow plays great against the Chiefs. He was 3-1 against them. Listen, the penalty at the end of the game, you hate to see it. First, the Chiefs make a big play, and they call it back for a hold on Wanya Morris, right? Then they throw it up there, and it is a penalty. He climbs his back. You can't do it. You hate to see games go that way, but it was a penalty. Rashee Rice had a chance to catch that ball, and he got run over. I thought Kansas City got a little conservative then, more than willing to settle for a 50-plus yard field goal rather than trying to move the ball a little bit down the field. But nonetheless – these two teams just play epic games. The fumble return by Burrow, I thought, was the turning point of the game. And Cincinnati playing without T. Higgins certainly hurts this team. They don't have a lot going without him. G?
And maybe one of the biggest injuries of the week, Kansas City loses Isaiah Pacheco. It's a fractured fibula. Projected week 11 or 12 return, which is 6 to 8 weeks. And if anybody took him in the first round in fantasy, you have a major problem to deal with at this moment, like I do in one of my leagues. Okay, we'll move on. Pittsburgh beat Detroit, beat Denver 13-6. Pittsburgh moves to 2-0. Justin Fields led the Steelers to the win. Broncos are struggling massively here. Bo Nix wasn't good. 3 interceptions, 2 turnovers. Just not good.
Doesn't have an arm.
Nope.
Plain and simple.
Then we get to Sunday night.
And Pittsburgh wins all sorts of ugly games. That's what Tomlin does best. They win ugly games. They win close games very well.
2 games left. Sunday night, Houston beat Chicago. Houston moves to 2-0. Despite struggling offensively in the second half, the Texans secure a 19-13 victory over the Bears thanks to a strong defensive performance and 4 field goals by Kyahmi Fairbairn. Rookie quarterback Caleb Williams threw 2 second-half interceptions for Chicago. Houston's defense was led by Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter, pressured him into mistakes, sealed the win. Houston, another injury, Joe Mixon. It's an ankle, projected 3 weeks. It's just injury after injury after injury. Any comments, guys?
I thought Nico Collins is a monster. I mean, he is so big, so strong, so fast, does everything so well. When he's on the field, it almost looks like he's just too big to cover sometimes. It's pretty wild to see. Again, this was Caleb a little bit better than week one, but still a long way to go. Kev?
I think they need the offensive line help. I mean, I know Texans have a terrific pressure there with Anderson and with Hunter there in the backfield constantly. I thought Caleb didn't look that bad considering the amount of pressure he was under the entire game. I think there's promise that, I mean, obviously he was number one pick. I think he's still going to be better than Bryce Young, as if that's a high bar to climb over. But, you know, mixed in with the injury there, Chase, you know, he was pissed off about, you know, his hip drop. You know, Mixon got the
– But it wasn't a hip drop, though. Chase was wrong.
What?
It wasn't a hip drop. It looked like it was going to be a hip drop, but he just kind of pulled him down instead. It was – didn't end up being that.
But everybody made a big deal about this hip drop tackle. I never heard of it until this year.
I just thought that was a tackle.
I grew up that – that was. I mean, you can't tackle high. You can't tackle low. Now you can't take a guy down from the side. I mean, how the hell are you supposed to tackle?
You're right.
Well done.
Yeah, I thought, you know, good win by the Texans there. Got good one out. And the Bears are going to be competitive all year. Like I said, if they play somebody other than the Texans with that great defensive line, I think Caleb might start to play a little bit better.
Well, here's the one thing with Caleb. Even at USC, he did not throw well from the pocket. He throws well from outside the pocket.
Yep.
So he's got to develop a pocket presence. With this offensive line against that defensive line, he couldn't do it this week. We need to see that progression.
Yep.
And last game on the board, Monday night, Atlanta beats Philadelphia 22-21. Before the game, A.J. Brown out. It's a hamstring injury, projecting 2 weeks that he'll be out.
That killed me in my fantasy, one of my fantasy.
I agree. Right. Kirk Cousins led the Falcons to a dramatic 22-21 victory over the Eagles, throwing a game-winning touchdown to Drake London with 34 seconds left. Despite the shaky start, Cousins redeemed himself with a flawless final drive, while the Eagles struggled to seal the win after a key mistake by Saquon Barkley, not catching a pass that should have been caught, and he actually should have just walked right into the end zone. Also, Jalen Hurts threw an interception on that drive also. So, Darren?
I think Hurts has been up and down so far. I don't think he's been as impressive. Second half, he started to run more, and it was noticeable. The tush push is back. It seemed like that was unstoppable. Saquon played really well until that drop. Cousins led the winning drive, but looked, you know, less than ordinary most of the way. Bijan looks good. Actually, they're giving him the carries, which is nice. Falcons avoid going 0-2 in this division. And the division we made fun of now has New Orleans and Tampa looking like two of the better teams in the NFL through 2 weeks at 2-0. But if Atlanta falls to 0-2 and falls 2 games behind, that would have been a problem. Philadelphia loses their game and they're tied with Dallas and Washington for first place in their division. Maybe it's the East that's the weakest division of football. I don't know. But I thought that Atlanta really needed it because of the way New Orleans and Tampa have come out.
Okay. Just upcoming real quick. Jets have the Patriots Thursday night. Giants get the Browns. They go to Cleveland at 0-2. Saints and Eagles this week. Texans and Vikings. I don't know. A couple other games. Lions, Cardinals, Ravens, Cowboys. That could be interesting. One of those teams is not going to like their record either at 1-2 or 0-3.
And the excitement of two Monday night games. Some of us love that.
I kind of enjoy
the 7 and 8:30 game. Yep. I really do get a kick out of watching two.
Jags,
two great games. Jags, Buffalo is pretty
Bills.
Good. Not to insult you, but Daniels is worth watching. But Washington, Cincinnati, this is a game Cincinnati better have. They're always 0-2.
Agreed.
They're 0-2 last couple of years. Yep. If they fall to 0-3, it becomes that much harder to get in. Same thing with Baltimore. Can't afford to fall to 0-3 against Dallas. So a lot going on this week. And Jets need to find a way to win this game at home against New England.
Agreed. Let's move to college.
We're going to roll through some of these games. Kev, you stick up your hand when you got to say something, pal. Bama rolled over Wisconsin and Camp Randall. Where is Barry Alvarez? Wisconsin has become a joke. They've become a damn joke. Used to be a team nobody wanted to go into Camp Randall. Bama rolled 42-10, not even close. Michigan survives against Arkansas State. They beat them 28-18, but the fact was Warren gets benched for Orgy, who you projected would be starting anyway, Gino, in the preseason. Warren got picked three times. Kev?
Yeah, but Davis Warren, none of his passes hit the ground.
He was 11-14.
11-14, the three completions were three interceptions.
Absolutely. Michigan, again, unimpressive, still ranked 18th. They get USC this week, so that'll be interesting. Oklahoma State and Notre Dame rolled so easily, not even worth talking about. Notre Dame, it wasn't even a joke. It was a joke. Miami also rolled 62-0, but Ward threw five touchdown passes, 364. Only reason why you mentioned it, because he's going to have that Heisman campaign going. Oregon, 49-14. Ninth-ranked Oregon over Oregon State in the Civil War. Gabriel, 20 for 24, 291 and two touchdowns. They outscored him 27-0 in the second half. It was actually a game at the half. Oregon State decided not to come out of the locker room. Oklahoma, 34, Tulane, 19. Probably the most impressive win Oklahoma's had all year, to be honest with you. Utah pulls away from Utah State in a game that Kev loved but didn't get the cover.
Yes, I did.
Not mine. At 18, what'd you get, 16?
I had Utah State.
Oh, I thought you had Utah.
No, I had Utah State in the upset.
Oh, okay, cool. So you won it.
That's why.
38-21. It was a 17-14 game at halftime, though. They pulled away in the second half also. And apparently Rising starts this week against Oklahoma State. So that's a big deal. Ole Miss 40, Wake 6. Okay, a couple things on this game. Dart, 377 and two touchdowns. Parrish, 148 and two touchdowns. Harris, 11 catches for 127 and a touchdown. Wake actually buys back the home and home. They're supposed to go to Ole Miss next year. They actually called up Ole Miss, paid them not to have to go to Ole Miss next year. That's how confident Wake is in their football team. Embarrasses a Wake fan. Any comment, Kev?
I think, and the problem with Lane Kiffin was really pissed off because now Ole Miss is looking for a Power 4 game, non-conference game for next year.
Yeah, it's kind of cheesy what Curry did. I didn't like it, but I guess he didn't want to.
He signed the contract, honored the contract.
I agree. I mean, I'm a Wake fan. I was pissed off about it. Texas in an interesting game, 56-7 over UTSA. Before we get into all of the Arch Manning stuff, the starting quarterback for UTSA, in case anyone doesn't know, is Owen McCown, son of Cade McCown.
It's Cade, right?
Cade's son played. Arch went 9 for 12 for 223. Also rushed for a 67-yard touchdown, which we've never seen a Manning do. He probably got all the athleticism of any Manning at all time, because none of these guys have ever seen him run more than 3 yards without falling down right away.
Well, Cooper was a more athletic brother, wasn't he?
Apparently he was. And he always played well until he got banged up. He was 14 for 16 early on. He played well also. But it was people want to see Arch, and Arch did not disappoint. Nebraska rolled over UNI. I don't even have to touch on it. Missouri, interesting game against BC. That BC got up quick. Missouri flew by them, and then BC made it close at the end. Bill O'Brien's doing a hell of a job in Chestnut Hill. This team's competitive every week. Kev?
My favorite part was third quarter, I think it was. Missouri got a couple of personal fouls, piled one on top of the other. They actually faced a second and 58 in the third quarter. Did not convert.
You cannot make that up. Geno's Tennessee Volunteers won 71-0. They led 65-0 at the half, so they really didn't run it up. Kev?
They didn't run it up, but, Hypo, do you need to call a nine-size kick up 30-0 in the first quarter?
He's a douche. He's a deuce, Josh.
Got the outside kick just to make sure they scored before the end of the first quarter, make it 37-0, just to erase any doubt there.
Just so you know, Kev, as you're waiting, I say South Carolina is the last game we're going to go over, okay? Georgia 13, Kentucky 12, ugly physical game. Was Georgia looking ahead to the Bama game? I don't know, but they survived it. Kev?
You know, here's where, you know, for the last 5 years, Georgia's gone on the road early in the season at an SEC school at night, or maybe one was during the day, but they've struggled. You know, last year they were down 14-3 at South Carolina in the first half. The year before, they squeaked by Missouri 26-22. 2 years before that, they squeaked by Kentucky 14-3. They have this early season game where they struggle, overcome it, come out with a W, and roll the rest of the year.
Well, I mean, listen, they're going to stop allowing the DUI privileges for these players if they don't play better.
Yep.
Okay, interesting game Friday night. Only interesting because I root for Kansas State. K-State 31, Arizona 7. Zonas come down, first drive, score 7-0. K-State matches him. Force a punt on the second drive. Edwards returns the punt for a touchdown. Game over, 14-7. Arizona comes down the field to try to tie it up, get picked in the end zone. Never really a factor. Avery Johnson was exceptional, except for his bonehead play at the half where they could have went up 17-7, but he ran out the clock on himself. But outside of that, he was terrific. He played an outstanding game, rushed for over 100, threw for over 100. McMillan is a beast at Arizona, by the way, as a receiver. He can't be covered. But Kansas State just rolled in a non-conference Big 12 game. And finally, of the ranked teams, Kev, 16th-ranked LSU 36, South Carolina 33. I have a bunch of things to say, but I'm going to let you say them, and I'll just fill in if you didn't cover it, but you probably will. So I'll let you
go. All right. Great, great game. Fun game to watch. No doubt about it. Probably one of the best games of the weekend. Two pick sixes overturned. One was a horse collar. Obviously, I didn't know the rule was that the jersey counts as a horse collar. It doesn't have to be inside and grab like the shoulder pass to make it a horse collar. No, did you know that rule?
Yeah, because if your cleat gets caught in the ground because somebody's grabbing you from behind and they force you to jerk, that's the only reason why. But okay. It's very rarely called on the jersey. I've only seen it called. I mean, by letter of the rule, that's it. But I only have seen it the other way.
Yeah. So that was one thing. The second one was overturned, brought back because of unnecessary roughness. It was a two-handed shove.
He shouldn't have hit him. He wasn't even trying to chase him down. He didn't have to hit him.
It's the quarterback. They're going to protect the quarterback. And once Nussmeier went down, it was an automatic flag. No doubt about it.
Nussmeier wasn't even running after him. Nussmeier was just standing there. He didn't have to do it. That was the part that hurt me on that one for South Carolina. Sorry, Kevin.
Now, of course, in the first quarter, you know, Sellers never should have thrown the pass, but he throws an interception into the end zone. You know, he gets a forearm to the helmet that knocks the helmet around. No rough for the passer call. You know, if you're going to protect the quarterback one way, you got to protect it the other way.
As Jet fans, we never got a roughing call for any of our quarterbacks. Maybe we'll get them now with Rodgers.
Of all the calls, though, the one that really irked me was the offensive pass interference in the fourth quarter. You know, Robbie Ashford transferred in from Auburn.
I believe so.
I wrote down. He looked like he couldn't throw the ball. He trucked one up. They made a 43-yard completion. All of a sudden, there's flags. Offensive pass interference. ABC went back and showed replays. Basically, I had every receiver out there in the pattern and could not find an offensive pass interference. So instead of converting it a 43-yard pass completion, it's back 15 yards. You know, so it's a 58-yard penalty as they're trying to run out the clock. And then the next play, and Herbie made the point of it, you know, Ashford scrambles, gets out of bounds. He gets probably 1 foot out of bounds. He gets a two-handed shove out of bounds. Again, no roughness. That being said, I'm not going to complain all that. No, that's my point about the refereeing. I'm not going to pound on it more than that. Yes, they blew a 17-0 lead, but watching the game, I never felt like it was over 17-0. I knew LSU was getting the second half kickoff, and I figured, you know, eventually when you start thinking about time and everything else, you just have that feeling they're going to have a chance to get that back-to-back possession, first half, second half, and get that game close again. And they, you know, they drove down, got stopped, forced a turnover, and drove back down and got the touchdown and, you know, basically had the same effect. But I thought the clock management at the end of both halves by South Carolina was the difference in the game. First half, it's 24-16. They have a They get a first down completion, a 39-yard completion to the 35. There's 37 seconds left. The South Carolina has two timeouts. Don't you take one? I know the clock stops. I know the clock stops in college, but it's not like the old days where the clock would stop for a minute while the chain gang got in position. This is once the ball's placed down, the clock restarts. You've got two timeouts. Take one there. Instead, they hurry up, two incompletions, two sacks, including one of the sellers gets hurt on, and end of half. End of the game, almost the exact same thing. They get a 31-yard completion to the 42 with 35 seconds left. There's still two timeouts. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. With the backup quarterback in there, they're not set. They get called for the false start, so they have to use a timeout anyway, and they get pushed back 5 yards. Eventually, a 49-yard field goal just missed left. From 44, that's probably good. I mean, just take your – be smart. You've got two timeouts. It's not like it was one timeout left. You had two timeouts. You had one after a big gain. Take your timeout. Get settled. You've got two young quarterbacks there with Sellers. Well, Asher's not young, but he's not as experienced the last couple of years. But, you know, take – I thought the clock management at the end of the two halves hurt them as well. Darren, well, I know you've got points.
I thought the Sellers injury was the key because I think that they wouldn't have slowed down at all. He had a 75-yard run.
Incredible.
Sanders had a 66-yard run. So they had two runs of huge numbers that they were untouched, basically, in both of them. They blocked a punt. You know, they did a lot of things really, really good. Then they fumbled inside their own 20 and held LSU to 3. Another good thing. So they did a lot of things right. I thought that block, that blindside block, roughing call on that pick six, I think was I think really, really hurt them. And I agree with you on the clock management. I did not see the end of the game. I saw the end of the first half. So I saw that one.
If you saw the end of the first half, it was almost a carbon copy at the end of the second half.
I got you. So South Carolina had every right to win this game. They fell a little bit short.
Yep.
Just a couple of non-ranked notes this week, guys. Iowa has their third straight over, 38-21 win. They trailed 14-10 at the half. UNLV trailed the whole game but stunned Kansas. That was a very impressive game. UCF, and I know you want to touch on this, winning touchdown with 36 seconds left. TCU led 28-7 and 31-14 this game, but UCF wins 35-34. Kev, you had a point?
No, you covered it pretty much. Just to say, they were down 28-7 early third and came back. I mean, I turned that game off. That game was on TV. I turned it off figuring that game was over.
Hoover, 394 and 4 touchdowns and a loss. Yep. Toledo blows out Mississippi State 41-17. Shouldn't happen at an SEC team. They led 23-3 at the half. Unacceptable loss for Jeff Lebby's Dogs. You had a point, Kev?
The Mississippi State paid Toledo $1.2 million to play.
Yep. And they got blown out. They didn't just lose like Notre Dame did with the 1.4. They got blown out. Yeah. Indiana, just because Cignetti's done an amazing job, 3-0 in the quest to rebuild the Crimson and Cream, they blow out conference road win, which I don't think I've seen from Indiana in forever. They won 42-13 at UCLA. UCLA's got a lot of work to do. Good to see Indiana off 3-0, and they have like a light team this week. They should get the 4-0 pretty easy. Colorado State, 28-9. These two teams just hate each other. Last year you had the whole incident and stuff like that. Sanders refuses to shake hands with the CSU quarterback who talked crap during the week. Colorado's just not that classy a team, but and for a team that was 4-8, they talk an awful lot. Kev?
Yeah. They did enough to win. Like I said, I wish they would win a little bit more classy.
Yeah, they just don't have it. Top. I mean, they have some talented players. They just
Hunter's amazing.
Oh, Hunter's a star. He plays both ways. I mean, whatever. I mean, it's ridiculous. Pitt in the backyard brawl, 38, West Virginia 34. They trailed by 10 with under 4 to play. Redshirt freshman quarterback Eli Holstein has engineered two straight fourth quarter comebacks. They won at Cincinnati. They beat West Virginia. Lots of complaints about the officiating. And, Narduzzi, who won the game, was fined in this one. Some controversial calls, each coach claiming that the other one's getting breaks. Real, real exciting. But this is two teams that hate each other. I love watching this game when I get a chance to. I always like Pitt versus West Virginia. I actually picked Pitt in this game, won a little money on it too, so I was happy. Wazoo 24, Washington 19. Another one where Darren hit the money line. At Washington State wins the Apple Cup late fourth quarter. Red zone stop to hold off Washington. Bad play call. They had him roll out. He had no room. He catches the ball. He had nowhere to turn up field. Just released it too late, or the call was bad. Wazoo gets the ball back. Then they commit two offside penalties. Let him run out the freaking clock. I was happy, but Washington committed 16 penalties in this game to allow Washington State to win. Kev?
Third and goal from the 10. They get 9 yards to get down to the one, and then fourth down, the loss of two. What type of play calling is that? I was glad for Washington State.
Being in the
remnants of the Pac-12.
Exactly. That's why I had my three-team parlay with Washington State, Oregon State, and Pitt. And, of course, I thought all both of the Pac-12 teams would fight, but they didn't.
The Pac-2 soon to become Pac-6, which we'll touch on.
Memphis 20, Florida State 12. Florida State 0-3 now on the Norville, who claims he had the hardest schedule in the country to start the season. Sorry, BC, Georgia Tech, and Memphis don't constitute the hardest schedule of the season. Arizona State survives Texas State by 3, Gino. Your Bobcats gave them all they could. Interesting game at the end. They made them come out. They put 1 second back on the clock. The Arizona State coach was going nuts about it. App State, just because they're our team, 21-19 winner. They trailed 16-0 at the one, came back, held on, win 21-19. Also, just like Kevin just mentioned, the Pac-2 is becoming the Pac-6, Kev.
Yeah, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State joined Washington State and Oregon State. So yeah, obviously, San Diego State, Fresno State maybe on deck. Anybody with a state in their name can join the Pac-6.
Well, the two teams that they're rumoring next are Memphis and Tulane, which are so close geographically, but that's what they're doing now. I mean, I don't get it. I think they just want to get two big cities, so they want to get New Orleans covered. They want to get Memphis covered.
I think there is also
I don't love
UNLV
it.
I was reading about also is a possibility.
UNLV could be – UNLV's asking to get in. They haven't been given that – and I think New Mexico would be the other one that would probably have a shot just because Albuquerque's a growing metropolis as well, apparently. Good to see that conference getting back. They just need to add two more teams. They'll have the pick of the litter. They can just take whoever they want from the Mountain West to make sure they have 8. This week, got a couple of interesting games. Thursday, our team, App State, host South Alabama. Friday, you got two ranked teams playing each other. You got Illinois at Nebraska, 24-22. NC State visits 21 Clemson. Arkansas State visits 20 Iowa State. Buffalo visits 23 Northern Illinois. Georgia Tech visits 19 Louisville. Kent State, who got blown out 71-0 to by Geno's Tennessee squad, goes to Penn State. So not an easy one this week. I think they're on the door by 45. Miami of Ohio heads to Notre Dame as Notre Dame schedules a patsy for themselves. UCLA goes to number 16 LSU. Another ranked matchup. USC is at Michigan, 11-18. Utah, Oklahoma State, two ranked teams, 12-14, where Utah's the road favorite in this one. Vandy's at number 7 Missouri. Number 8 Miami heads to USF in a state battle. UL Monroe goes to now number 1 Texas, who passed Georgia because of the lack of great performance by the Bulldogs. And 13 Kansas State heads to BYU with a tough road game in the conference. You never want to go to BYU. And Gino, in the big one, Gaylord Family, Oklahoma Memorial Stadium, under the lights in Norman, G. 6th-ranked Tennessee, your squad, the team you've bet every week so far, coming to town to take on 15th-ranked Oklahoma. Tennessee's laying 7, last I saw, unless you see something different. Where are you going, Gino? Who do you like in this one? Do you ride the Vols one more week, G?
Yes. Lamaleva to Sampson lead the way for Tennessee. Tennessee goes to 4-0. Take Tennessee minus the 7.
Kev, where are you going in this one?
Tennessee, who is also now added a 10% surcharge on the tickets to help pay their athletes.
Probably.
No, that came out this week.
Oh, did they really?
Put a 10% increase on the price of the tickets to help pay for the athletes. Oklahoma has not looked good the last 2 weeks against Houston, against Tulane. Taking Tennessee minus the 7.
Okay, I'm going to lone wolf it. I'm going to take Oklahoma to lose a close one against Tennessee. I think it'll be a little closer than people think. Tennessee has played nobody so far. This is the first time they're going to get hit back. Let's see how they respond. I think they'll find a way, but I think that Oklahoma will cover this game.
Should be interesting. It's Heupel's first time back at Oklahoma since he was a quarterback and then got fired about 6 or 7 years ago as offensive coordinator by Stoops.
Absolutely. Do we want to do the other college picks now or just do them all at the end? Let's do them now. Give us the other two.
All right. So I'm going to the ACC. I'm taking Duke minus 14 against Middle Tennessee State. Malik Murphy, he's already got 8 touchdowns and 800 yards through 3 games. I think he increases that. Duke minus 14 is my second game. And my third game is Missouri minus 20.5 against Vandy. Take Missouri in a route. Nate Noel, he's going to have a huge game on the ground. This is big time. Missouri probably wins this by like 40. Take Missouri minus 20.5 against Vandy.
All righty, Kev.
You know, Michigan's going to Orgy. I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think USC is just better. Malik Moss is playing real well. They're off the bye week also. I'm taking USC laying the 5.5 at Michigan. And the third game, I'm taking another road team. I think this is going to be a close game. Both teams have started off 3-0. I'm taking Illinois plus a 7.5 at Nebraska. That extra half is giving me Illinois.
All right. I was going to take Nebraska, but I'm not going to do it, though. I'm going to take Oklahoma State. No, I'm going to take Oklahoma State plus 1.5 at home against Utah.
I had that game, too.
I just think that at home, Oklahoma State finds a way to win this game. 2 seventh-year quarterbacks going at each other. You got to love that. Two 30-year-olds playing quarterback. The other one I'm going to take is I'm going to take Rutgers on the road at Vatech getting 3.5. I think Rutgers has started off pretty well. I'm going to see what they can do. Hopefully they find a way to get there. I like Missouri. Gino took that one, so I'm not going to steal that one. I think that Kansas, West Virginia will be over 56. I think Tennessee, Oklahoma will be under 57. Just a couple other picks that I have for you to look at. And that's the world of college football, Jake.
Right.
We have a long show today.
We're going to move to a little baseball very quickly. Yankees and Mets both playing well right now. Yankees in first place with before today it was a 3-game lead on Baltimore.
Mets was 4
in the wild. What?
It was 4, I think, coming into today, wasn't it?
It was 4? Okay.
Yep.
Mets in the wild card right now. Two games in front, I believe. 3 games in front.
2 games in front of Atlanta, including tonight's action. They're still tied with Arizona for the second wild card. They're only about 2 back of San Diego.
Yeah, Padres won today, so they're 2 back.
Yep.
What's 2.5? So
we've been talking about this. So the team out right now, San Diego, the Mets, and Arizona in. The team out right now is Atlanta as we stand right now. Kev?
Maybe the injuries have caught up to Atlanta. You know, they've withstood them for so long this season. And, good for the Mets. They have to go out there. They've got the Phillies in this weekend, 4-game series. They've got to at least split. At least. 3 out of 4 would be what you really want as a Mets fan. You know, they lost 2 out of 3 last weekend. The Saturday game, they blew. Severino gave up a couple of – the only mistakes he made, he gave up a couple of home runs to Harper, left up 4-3, and then the bullpen blew it. Sunday was a pitcher's duel. Diaz gave it up in the 9th, hit by Realmuto. But they bounced back, taking 3 from Washington as they needed to. They squeaked by game 1, 2-1, and then 2 blowouts, 10-1, 10-0. So, you know, by next week at this time, they'll have 4 with Philly, 3 with Atlanta. And so by next Wednesday night, we'll have a really good idea of where the Mets stand. Yep. And they play Milwaukee the last weekend of the season. Depending on if Milwaukee still got a chance for the 1 or 2, or if they're settling into the 3, could affect Milwaukee's pitching plans as well. And how they're going to line up their rotation. So maybe a little bit of a break for the Mets playing Milwaukee the weekend after.
Okay. Darren, any Yankee points?
Well, just quick Met point. The Braves actually got beaten up by the Dodgers, and that allowed them to leapfrog. Arizona then comes back and loses 2 out of 3 to Colorado, which you don't expect. And then Atlanta also loses a game to Cincinnati where they led yesterday. So there was a few things there. The Mets, they have to hit. I can't believe I'm saying that. But with Lindor out, they need to hit consistently. They can't be playing in these low scoring. I know they're blowing out Washington.
Oh, it's Washington.
They need to hit this weekend. They need to hit this weekend. They can't have games where they go 1-1. That offense is too good. They've got to play better. Lindor is a concern. He's got to come back. Yep. As far as the Yankees go, they pulled into a nice lead on Baltimore. I didn't think it would happen. They have a 1.5 game lead going into today for the overall 1 seed in the American League. Didn't think that would happen either, the way this team was playing. Because, you know, Cashman and Boone thought that Clay Holmes should be closing games despite blowing 11 freaking saves. Again, fighting for the one seed is nice. I the offense, Dominguez is playing. He's not hitting the hell out of the ball, but he had a homer last night. I just feel so much better with him in the lineup. I like seeing that. They've decided to move Stroman into the pen. Looks like they brought Cortez back, and Stroman's the guy that's going to be the odd guy out. And if they get the one seed, somebody else is coming out. Maybe even two more guys are coming out. You got to figure who the top three are because of the off days now, the way they make the playoffs, that you're going to be able to go with a three-man rotation. Also embarrassing, Cole, two out, nobody on, walks Devers, and then they implode. What the hell are you doing? You're Garrett Cole. Challenge Rafael Devers. He hits a homer, you're down 1-0. Deal with it. I don't understand that. I don't understand the cowardice. And unless there's a World Series, I want Cashman and Boone gone. I want him gone in the World Series. I agree. That's all I say about that.
All right.
But one Yankee point. Soto and Judge become the first Yankee teammates with 40 home run seasons since. Any guess?
Maris Mantle? I don't know.
Maris Mantle, 61. Yep, okay. Right. Going back to your Clay Holmes point, you know, look at what Baltimore did. Craig Kimbrell struggled. They took him out of the closer role, still struggled, pitching to a 15 ERA for the last month, designated for assignment. He's gone. He's out of here.
Yeah, but the Yankees can't do
that. They may not have to go that extreme with Holmes, but he needed to be out of the closer role a long time ago.
Another interesting thing, Detroit only a game and a half behind Minnesota for that wild card right now. Detroit doing everything they can. And Seattle's only three back. I mean, they're playing the Yankees right now. They're down 1-0. That last wild card spot is closer than the Braves are to the Mets at this point, which is kind of interesting. Yeah. And Minnesota's only a game and a half behind Kansas City.
The Ohtani watch, he's got 48 home runs, 49 stolen bases after tonight. Judge, 53-136. He's hitting 323 before today. Bobby Witt's at 331. So not sure if there's enough games to actually get the average where he could be a Triple Crown winner.
He's got a shot.
No, he does. And big fact that I actually saw today is – the last time the Guardians lost a game that they were had a lead through eight innings. Any idea when? September 16th of 2023. They've gone a full calendar year without blowing a game in the ninth. If they have the lead after eight, they won through a whole calendar year at this point. That's all I got for baseball. Anything else? A
couple of quick points. Arias now leads the National League in hitting again. He seems to do it every year. He was hitting like 320 going in. Rooker, 302, 38, 109. Quietest great year you'll ever hear about. Bobby Witt, first guy to 200 hits. Arias has 194. So two guys will probably get 200 hits. Sale, 17-3, 235. The Geno stat, 219 Ks. Cease at 215. Cease probably passed him tonight, but he only had 5 Ks in 8 in the third. So Sale should have extend his lead. Schuble, same thing, 16-4 with a 250 ERA and 214 Ks. But Berrios and Lugo both have 16 wins with him, so that's going to be interesting. Lugo's got 197 and two-thirds innings pitched, so he's going to get to the 200-inning mark. Okay, that leads the league. Webb's at 193 and two-thirds. He'll also get there. Gilbert, 191 and two-thirds. You figure he gets there too. And Imanaga, just to throw him out there, 14-3 with a 303 ERA and 170 strikeouts. Kid's had a good year. The Grimace has his permanent seat in Section 302 at Met Games now. So, you know, if you want to check out what Grimace's seat is, it's in Section 302. I'm not sure the exact seat number. I should know this. I just don't.
All right. Go ahead, Kev.
I was going to say, Reds, Brandon Williamson, Mets, Christian Scott, two more young pitchers, Tommy John surgery for both of them. You know, God forbid we teach these kids how to throw the damn ball coming up through the minors. We got to protect everybody. Everybody's going for Tommy John surgery. We never had this when we were younger. I'm sorry. Throw the damn ball. Go out there. Practice. Throw.
Great. We're moving on.
I'll beat you all day on this.
Thank you, but we're moving on tonight. We are going to the NFL picks.
Two quick points. Horse racing for those people that care about the 2025 Kentucky Derby. The first 10 points have been given out for a qualification. Jonathan's Way won the Iroquois. At Churchill, kind of wire to wire. I mean, he was up front with another horse. Fractions 46 at a half, and he still was able to pull away.
Wow.
Very impressive. 23 at the quarter, 46 at the half, though. I thought it was pretty good. And college hoops, just because I love it. On 12-14, the lineup that's scheduled to come out the first week when college football is over, Louisville plays Kentucky. Xavier plays Cincinnati in the Catholic Convict matchup. Gonzaga, UConn. Texas A&M, Purdue. Tennessee, Illinois. NC State, Kansas. UCLA, Arizona. Creighton, Alabama. Memphis, Clemson. Auburn, Ohio State. Seton Hall, Rutgers. Battle of New Jersey. Geno's all over that. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, the only Bedlam game they're going to have. Wisconsin, Butler. Marquette, Dayton. Colorado State, VCU, and those two teams that are just below the conferences that get up there. Florida, Arizona State. Grand Canyon, who's been good against Georgia. St. Mary's, Boise State. Providence goes to St. Bonaventure, where Woj, who retired today from doing NBA coverage, is going to be the GM at St. Bonaventure. Georgetown, Syracuse. Utah State, South Florida, and LSU, SMU. That is a lineup and a half on December 14th. If you love college basketball like we do, that's a lineup and a half.
Can't wait.
Let's go to NFL picks. Sorry, G.
All right. So through 2 weeks, Kev leads the way with 4-1-1. Darren's at 1-5, and Gino's at 0-6. And because Gino's 0-6, Gino is going first today. We are switching it up. My first game is the Cleveland Browns -6.5 at home against the Giants. We're taking the Browns. I think the Giants are horrible. I think they continue this loss. I think we're edging very close to Drew Lock and being in here. And Dable, I'm not sure if he's even going to finish the season at this point. My second game, they made the change at quarterback. I don't think it matters. I'm taking the Raiders -5.5 at home against Carolina. I think they're just too much for them. I think Carolina is going to play much better now that Andy Dalton's in at the quarterback spot, but I think Las Vegas just has too much. And my third game, I'm taking the Eagles on the road, getting 2.5 in New Orleans. New Orleans, they're playing very well. They're not this good. I think Philadelphia has a little letdown after last week. They're going to come back with gusto. Take Philly +2.5 in my third game. Darren?
I'm going to start on Monday night. I'm taking Cincinnati laying the 7.5 against your Washington Commanders. I just think that they need this game desperately. I think they come out and win it. My second game also on Monday night, I'm taking Jacksonville +5 against Buffalo. I think Jacksonville's desperate at 0-2, and I think they're going to find a way to keep this close and maybe pull it out if they can. And then my third one, you know, I have no faith in Denver. I'm going to take Tampa Bay -6.5 against the Broncos. If that was one of yours, Kev, I apologize. I think Tampa Bay finds a way to win this game by at least a touchdown. So those are my three. Kev?
I hate seeing all the favorites that I've got on my sheet. The underdog I like the most would be New England, and I'm not picking against my Jets. I'm sorry. I can't do that. I agree with Eugenio and Cleveland. I agree with Darren and Tampa Bay. I'm going to start with Seattle -4 against the Dolphins. It's Skylar Thompson. Enough said. I think Seattle wins this game, covering the 4. The second game, on their short week, I don't think Atlanta matches up with Kansas City. I've got the Chiefs -3.5 against Atlanta. And the third game, I got two games that I'm going against you guys. I'm going to pick the Bills -5. I'm going to go head-to-head with Darren on that one. I just think Bills are much better. Jacksonville, no, Trevor Lawrence has to step up, and until he does it, I have no faith in Trevor Lawrence until he shows it to me. You know, going back to last year, he's just looked terrible. I also like the Saints over Philly, but I'll go with Buffalo over Jacksonville as my third pick.
Good enough. Any other points you guys want to make before we wrap up?
Those are the picks for week 3 of the NFL season. That's right.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens with Darren here, with Kevin here, with Gino. Talk about the wonderful, wild, wacky world of sports. A wacky world where the show goes almost an hour and a half. Sorry, guys. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be Apple products, Spotify, whatever you like. And, we post a lot on social. Please like, share, tell everybody about it. Give us your comments back. We ask a question. Don't just like it. Tell us what your opinion is. That's what makes it better. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.